In response to food contaminations that sickened and killed many, the federal government passed the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2010. The pending implementation of this act leads us to ask, for whom will government make food safe?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1018th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Puerto Montt who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Hello, Jason.
Pleasure to be with.
Folks, in response to large-scale contaminations of spinach, peanut butter, and other foods that sickened and killed many across the land, the federal government passed the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2010, signed into law in early 2011. In the years since, government and representatives from agriculture and food processing interests developed Food Safety Modernization Act's rules and regulations. Implementation of these rules and regulations now awaits the president's approval, evidently. At least that's what the press release tells us. When the go is given by the president and his administration, the federal food police, under the direction of food safety czar and former Monsanto attorney Michael Taylor, will strike out from Washington, D.C. to make the nation's food safe. While some point to the federal food police as a sure cure for foodborne illnesses that's stricken 48 million Americans every year, others see the food police as a way for powerful interests to restrict competition among the producers of the nation's food. These two ways of seeing the Food Safety Modernization Act lead us to ask, for whom will Food Safety Modernization make food safe? What do you think? Well, here to help us search for an answer, we have Pete Kennedy, back from a long absence from the food chain. Gosh, Pete, good to have you back.
Great to be on, Michael.
So you're giving a speech today, so you just got out of a speech, so we thank you for joining us. Much appreciative. Pete is the president of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. First of all, why on earth do farmers and consumers need a legal defense fund, Pete?
Well, just the system works against them, Michael. It's a one-size-fits-all regulatory system out there, so we're trying to create as favorable a climate, a regulatory climate for them. So the combination of the government Big Ag Alliance can't put them out of business.
And so there, you're essentially there to support the smaller producers of the nation's food, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, basically two food systems now. There's the industrial food system and the growing local food system. We're there to protect producers in the local food system.
Well, good enough. And who pays your way there at Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund?
Not the government, Michael. It's we're a totally grassroots organization. I mean, our membership fees mainly come from, our revenues mainly come from membership fees and private individual donations. So we're about as grassroots as you can get.
Good to go. Now, early in June, folks, I got a couple of press releases. I always get lots of press releases, but a couple in early June struck my attention. One of them was from the Center for Science in the Public Interest that said the Food Safety Modernization Act is pending the president's approval. Please write the president and tell him to get off the stick and approve these sets of rules and regulations so we can go about making food safe for the nation. And then I got another one from Pete Kennedy at the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund and said, wait a minute. this is not good. This is going to make it really hard for the producers of local food to stay in business because these rules and regulations were not designed to help them. They were designed to help somebody else. So there's really two ways of looking at this Food Safety Modernization Act. Now, we did ask the folks at the Center for Science in the Public Interest, as well as the folks at the Pew Charitable Trust and a couple of other organizations to join us today to represent their side, but they all got very busy on this Saturday and can't join us. So we're going to talk with Pete and try to flush this out, remembering, of course, that there are always two sides to the story, and we'll try to figure out what the other side is without anybody to represent it. So what happened with the food situation to require the government to step in and demand that we have safe food with the Food Safety Modernization Act, Pete?
Well, there were food safety problems with the industrial food system, Michael. I mean, you had the right county egg foodborne illness right when this act was being debated, which I definitely think helped in its passage. You had a number of illnesses caused by sales of produce by some of the bigger outfits in this country. But what this does is it's a one-size-fits-all regulatory scheme with the exception that there are some exemptions provided for certain aspects of the regulation. And just in our view is if our members and local food producers can't get under these exemptions, they're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, let's take us back a couple steps there. There were these very large contaminations of foods manufactured by the industrial model in which, you know, Peanut Corporation, America, that manufacture peanut butter and sell it to pretty much everybody, let go of some very bad stuff, and it sickened a lot of people. We had some spinach folks out here on the West Coast that shipped some spinach that sickened a lot of people. There were cantaloupe. There always seems to be something bad happening where, you know, when there's an industrial model where one factory, as it were, manufactures food that gets shipped all over the country, and something happens to that one factory, then everybody gets in trouble. But has there ever been any instance in which a local food, a purveyor of local food has contaminated many people?
Sure there has. I mean, there's no perfect food system. People get sick from eating industrial food. They get sick from eating local food. But I would say overall, there's no question that the local food producers, whether they're regulated or unregulated, have a better record for food safety than regulated producers in the industrial system. And beyond that, there's just a transparency and traceability for local food. Just if someone gets sick, you pick up the phone, call the producer, you bought it directly.
Or your baseball bat, as the case may be, right? So with it, the local food system has a built-in accountability to it that an industrial model, I mean, if you're buying baby food from China, who are you going to go after with your baseball bat, you know, if your child gets sick with the industrial baby food? There's nobody to go after. And so they come across with a Food Safety Modernization Act to fix that, to fix the industrial model. But are those same rules that apply for the industrial model the same rules that are going to be applied to the local model?
Well, the answer to that is yes, unless they have these local producers fit under these exemptions. And if they don't fit under the exemptions, there are just all kinds of regulations. FDA has food safety plans where, similar to the HACCP plans that put so many of these small slaughterhouses out of business, where you have to be monitoring, conducting what they call a hazard analysis. You have to come up with risk-based preventative controls. You have to do environmental, something they call environmental monitoring. something else, all these big words, supplier verification. And what that spells out is a ton of money, which producers don't have. And so, in effect, it winds up being an Industry Protection Act.
And then what powers have been granted to the federal government via the Food Safety Modernization Act?
Well, basically, now they have the mandatory recall power. They never had that before. So they don't need a court order. And just another question.
Hold that thought, because I have to take a quick break. But where we're going to leave it is that they don't need a court order. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Pete Kennedy. He, the president of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, and you. Who do you think government is going to make food safe for? Is it going to be you and I? Is it going to be the industrial manufacturers of food? Is it going to be the local farmer? Do stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5-6 or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at metrofarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at metrofarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at metrofarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at metrofarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-6 or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at metrofarm.com. That's metrofarm.com.
Well, they say the Food Safety Modernization Act will make food safe. But I ask today, for whom will the Food Safety Modernization Act make food safe? Who do you think? I'm curious to hear. We're with Pete Kennedy, the president of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. He watches over the small producers of America and looks at this Food Safety Modernization Act and goes, I'm not so certain it's going to help small producers, most likely help big producers. Giving this act passed by the federal government in 2010 will give the federal government almost dictatorial control over the nation's food, in that the federal government will not need a court order to confiscate food. Is that true, Pete?
That is true. I mean, first of all, they have the mandatory recall power. And by the way, Michael, the way the law was before this passed, FDA had plenty of power to take action in a hurry. They just needed a court order. They could get a seizure order to seize product. They could get an injunction to stop any movement of product, and they could probably do it not much faster than the time it would take to make a phone call to the courthouse if thought the problem was serious.
So it's kind of like now they have this act gave the federal government the right to search and seize without a court order, without a search warrant, without anything. They could just march right into your kitchen and take all your food.
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, there's a law that allows them to administratively, it's called administrative detention, meaning just what you said, they can seize food without a court order. That was actually on the books for a while as a result of the Bioterrorism Act. But what the Food Safety Modernization Act did was before they needed to find... They needed to have what the law called credible evidence that a product was adulterated, that it was capable of making people sick. Mm-hmm. Now they don't. It can be, you know, it can even be what's called misbranded. I mean, if there's a label they don't think is right, they have the power to seize that label without a court order. And the standard is less, too. It's easier for FDA now. The standard used to be credible evidence. And now it's they just need a reason to believe. So they've opened up and increased their seizure powers quite a bit with this new law.
Is there a difference between a reason to believe and a reason to want to believe?
You don't know. It's a pretty vague concept opposed to some concrete kind of evidence, which is what the old standard was.
Well, the government, you know, passed this law in a big, huge rush at the, in the waning moments of 2010. It was kind of like at midnight or something on New Christmas Eve or something, they passed the law. And it was signed into law in early 2011 by the president. But it's been hung up for years and years and years now. And why?
Just because the regulations are so cumbersome. I mean, just the law itself is so complicated that it's taken much longer to go through than people thought. I mean, that's one reason. And then the other reason, just FDA, what they have proposed for regulations to accompany the Food Safety Modernization Act is just so draconian in some cases that people are fighting back as much as they can. And you're right. I mean, there's probably two of the worst provisions in the act. There's a court order that those rules, and one deals with food safety plans for these food processing plants. Another one deals with national produce safety standards. They have to be in place by October. And for many of our members, what are known as small and very small businesses, they have a 2 or 3 year window. But for us, it's once something like that hits, I don't know how well you can get prepared for it. It's just so overwhelming compared to the resources these people have. And what we're just trying to do as best we can is make sure they're exempt from those requirements.
How did the rules get made? So the government passes this law in 2010, and then everybody gets together and say, okay, we're going to make rules and regulations that make food safe. How does that sausage making work? You're close to Washington, D.C. there. The rest of us out here in the world are going, how does that work? I mean, who decides how you make food safe?
Well, there's this rulemaking process to clarify the law. And you can you know, they have this notice and comment period where you can protest and ask FDA to change the more onerous provisions in the rules. But ultimately, it's, it's up to them whether they want to do it or not. I mean, political pressure can work on them, but this rulemaking process is all part of this Administrative Procedures Act, which one of the worst laws this country's ever had that was passed about 70 years ago, which in effect makes agencies like the FDA another legislator and a less accountable one than the Congress.
So a bunch of people got together and said, this is what we're going to do. And I would assume that there were, you know, a lot of interests contending on those rules and regulations. I can see how, you know, very big industrial companies, you know, could have an influence there. But I don't understand how little people could have an influence.
Well, that's right. I mean, there was a book written a long time ago called Confessions of a Monopolist. And the author, who I think was associated with the big business empires of the time, or as an observer on the scene, was just saying you cannot have a monopoly without the help of the government. And what the big outfits are able to do is they have the economies of scale to be able to comply with these rules and stay in business, where the small producer does not. And it's a tried and true formula for big business, and they've gone back to it again and again.
You know, to help people understand the concept of economies of scale, I often use the example of Farmer Joe and Farmer John. And Farmer Joe has 1 acre of land, and Farmer John has 1,000 acres. And they both go downtown one day to buy a new $10,000 tractor. Well, Farmer Joe with the 1 acre, that tractor costs $10,000. But Farmer John with 1,000 acres, the tractor only costs $10 per acre. So if you apply those economies of scale with, you know, influencing government, for example, let's say you wanted to take your congressman on a $10,000 private jet cruise to the Bahamas or something like that. If you have 1 acre, it would cost $10,000. But if you have 1,000 acres, it only costs $10. So you fly the congressman, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, what's happening, I think, in our food system today, Michael, is the big ag runs on such small margins that even if the local food system gets another percent of the total food dollar, it's a threat to them. So, I mean, their best investment isn't necessarily in research and development or something like that. It's in lobbying. And that's where the biggest payoff.
And so in the lobbying for the Food Safety Modernization Act, you can set rules and regulations designed to make food safe for giant industrial concerns, and you can apply those same rules to the neighborhood farmer who's selling rutabagas at the farmer's market.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, again, these exemptions kick in, but there's also, I mean, one of the more well-known exemptions for this Food Safety Modernization Act is the Tester-Hagen exemption, where if you sell so much or under so many dollars in produce, you're not subject to these.
Where you have to be guaranteed to stay poor, and then you can stay under the exemptions, something like that, right?
Well, the thing is, it's easy. FDA is trying to water down.
Okay. Hold that thought, Pete. We'll be right back with the Tester-Hagen Amendment. And you, what do you think out there? Who is government going to make food safe for? Right back. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can feel safe now because the federal government passed the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2010. And after a half decade of squabbling over rules and regulations, that act is ready to be implemented by the Federal Drug Administration's Food and Drug Administration's Food Safety Police, headed up by Food Safety Czar Michael Taylor, former attorney for the Monsanto Corporation. And so there are provisions in this rulemaking, to make it possible for small farmers to survive, principally by virtue of the Tester-Hagen Amendment that exempts small farms from these rules and regulations as long as they stay small. Is that true, Peter Kennedy?
Well, to a certain extent, Michael. What FDA has done in this rulemaking process with Tester-Hagen is that they are trying to water down the exemption, where if you are covered by Tester-Hagen, if FDA thinks, you know, the conditions at your place are harmful to food safety, even though there isn't any evidence that either you made people sick or there's any illness that, even any illness that's being investigated that could be related to the type of food the producer is producing in his area, they can still revoke the exemption. And once they revoke the exemption, there isn't a whole lot of time for the producer to contest it. And if the exemption is revoked, he is subject to getting in complete compliance with some of these laws where, you know, the way the rulemaking process works, the people who didn't have the exemption, it might take them they might have 2 or 3 years to get in compliance, where with this producer, it could be a matter of months.
Wow. So, folks, we're going to go to the phones and ask what you think about the Food Safety Modernization Act. Who is it going to make food safe for? Do you think it's going to make food safe for you and I, who buy food out there in the world of marketplaces? And is it going to make food safe for the industrial producers of food, the people who manufacture food way over there and bring it way over here? Or is it going to make food safe for the local farmers, the people who service at the farmers market and whatnot? 831-479-1080 is the phone number. 831-479-1080. Before we go to the phones, I'd like to ask Pete one question that kind of has me puzzled, and that is, how in the world did the former attorney for the Monsanto Corporation become the food safety czar of the mayor of the United States of America?
Well, it's just part of the revolving door that has existed for many years in Washington, Michael. I mean, this is someone who also was with FDA once they basically legalized the marketing of genetically modified plants, where the public didn't really have any input in that. And he just looks like he's there as an industry fixer to make sure that this is implemented in such a way where the big ag will have the advantage over the smaller producer.
Wow. There you go. Well, let's go to the phones and talk with Mary. Mary, welcome to the Food Chain. You're talking with Pete Kennedy, president of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Go ahead.
Hi, Michael, and hi, Pete. Thank you for the show. And I do want to answer the question about who government makes this our food system safe for. And given that the FDA has complete control, including rules and regulations and policies, for the given that over 100,000 U.S. citizens die from pharmaceutical complicated deaths in the United States, I don't think the feds have interest in we the people. I suggest simply follow the money and look to the line of politicians and bureaucrats that have jobs and, you know, move around quite freely, absolutely doing nothing and making nobody safe for we the people. I'll take the answer off the air.
Well, wait a minute. Don't you think that government is going to make food safe for you and I?
No, I think the more they meddle, the worse it gets.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Pete.
What's going to happen, Michael, is what you're going to see is way too much of our food is imported right now. I mean, your ability to feed your own country and being self-sufficient in food production is really your first line of national defense. And one example I can give of that in this new act is there's an inspection schedule. There are actually more foreign firms who will be subject to this act than domestic firms. But I think the way the inspection schedule works out, more domestic firms will be inspected than foreign firms, even though food producers outside our borders represent the majority of people being inspected. So what you're going to have is likely, if this is fully implemented, less self-sufficiency in foreign and food production and greater market share for imports.
Well, isn't that go along with the notion that what the rules are? You know, I've been following the newspaper, the financial press accounts of the insurance agency in lieu of the passage of the Affordable Care Act. And what I saw in the paper just this morning was the fact that the health insurance companies have been consolidating at an incredible rate. You know, they've been just been buying up each other. And where there were many health insurance companies, now there's only going to be a few. And I guess that's all under the rubric of affordable health care. Now I look at the Food Safety Modernization Act and wonder, are we going to see the same thing where we have, you know, one or two giant firms importing food from someplace else because it's the only place you can, you know, grow and process food and survive the rules and regulations? Is that where we're going?
Oh, I definitely think it's possible. You just have these multinationals who control the trade channels who will be bringing in greater amounts of food into the country. And probably, even though this act does call for more inspectors, more inspections of foreign facilities, I guess they have a third-party audit system. Yeah, the likelihood is you're going to get unregulated food still with the increase in imports, probably more than exists right now brought into this country, as opposed to the unregulated food produced locally, where if there's a problem, you just pick up the phone, call the producer.
Yeah, or your baseball bat and go call the producer. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with Pete Kennedy. He's the president of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. We're talking about the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2010, which has been in the sausage-making process in Washington, D.C. for the last half decade. They come up with a whole bunch of rules and regulations to make food safe. And today we just pause to ask, for whom will the government make food safe? Do you think it's going to make food safe for you and I? Is it going to make food safe for the industrial producers of food? What about those little farmers at the farmers market? Are they going to be made safe? Don't know. What do you think? 831-479-1080. Last evening, I had the opportunity to join with a whole bunch of other people to celebrate locally grown flowers, actually. There were 100 people there, over 100, and were celebrating local flower growers. And you know, in talking around to them, you know, people say, what are you going to do your show on? I said, the Food Safety Modernization Act. And they said, what's that? And I got to thinking, it's truly amazing. So few people even know that the government is establishing rules and regulations that will control absolutely everybody's food. How does that happen, Pete Kennedy? As a president of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, you must scratch your head at that and wonder as well.
Well, first of all, I think the mainstream media is just basically their big... their ad revenues come from industry, so they're not going to report it as accurately as they should. And I guess the other thing, Michael, is this is being slowly implemented over time. I mean, it's not hitting full force right away. Mm-hmm. Once it does hit, yeah, a lot more people are going to know about it in a hurry.
So the slow implementation is the trick, then. And nobody's really paying attention because why should they? Because they're going to make food safe and everybody wants safe food. That's a no-brainer. But there it is. So it's kind of amazing, though, that nobody is paying attention. I look at some of the things going on in Washington, D.C., where you see there's currently a bill in the House, I believe, sponsored by both Republicans and Democrats to give the Monsanto Corporation free rein with respect to its genetically modified foods. No state will be able to pass laws against planting GMOs. But somehow, both sides of the political fence are now representing this one company. And it seems like there's nobody to represent the other side, the rest of the people, except Pete Kennedy and the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund.
Well, you're just, yeah. It's like this stepped up process, Michael. Yeah, what you were just talking about, the Pompeo bill, that will take away the state's rights to require labeling of genetically modified foods and just pass a watered-down version of a GMO labeling requirement. At the same time this is going on, you have the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which is a treaty that the public does not have a right to see right now. I mean, just what the public hears about it is based on leaks, and one of the leaks is that these corporations will now be able to sue directly through a tribunal to challenge, my understanding is, federal, state, and local laws. So you just seem to have this accelerated push right now to consolidate corporate power in this country.
Well, that would really kind of fit in with what you were saying then about the industrialization of international industrialization of food, where you remove food from the production from the United States, which, you know, geographically is probably situated to be the most agriculturally productive country in the world, where you take away the production from the United States of America and move it offshore, and then force those in the United States to eat food that comes in from offshore. And if you have this international tribunal, there's who do the consumers stand up to? Who do you talk to? You can't call your congressman anymore because they don't count anymore.
Right, and I think the solution to that, Michael, is gets to do with the funding of the Food Safety Modernization Act. I mean, I mentioned the slow implementation is one reason that it's not being enforced where more people are noticing it, at least at this time. Another reason is that they don't have the funding they need. I think FDA has said that themselves on their own website, which is a good thing. And what is perverse about this law is that there is a provision in there on reinspection fees, where if FDA inspects a facility initially, there is no bill. The facility doesn't have to pay anything. But if FDA finds a problem at the facility for the reinspection under federal regulation, that owner of the facility will have to pay FDA $217 an hour for anything related to the reinspection. And what you've got is, just a lot of small firms might not be able to afford one reinspection. I mean, and everything associated with it, as low as their margins are. And the smaller producer is going to be the low-hanging fruit for these FDA inspectors. So here it is. You know, they don't have the money they need from Congress. This is a way to go get it. The easiest way to go get it is to go after the people who don't have the resources to defend themselves. And that is the small farmer and the artisan producer.
So what they'll have to do is pay the fines to operate the agency. So they're kind of like the highway patrol, you know. Got to go out and write the tickets to keep things going here. Folks, this is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. When we get back with Pete Kennedy, I'm going to ask the big question. This is the question that really scares me with respect to giving government all this power to do everything. There's two questions I want to ask him, one of which is, why do we actually need a federal government to supervise the local farmer? Right back. Well, folks, it seems to me the farther we go from the source of our food, the more we need somebody watching out for us. If we're buying our food from the farmer's market, it's just you and the farmer and right there. So who needs the federal government? But if you're buying your food from our good friends over there in China, gosh, it seems like it would be nice to have a lot of people watching over your food, right? Because who knows what they're doing to it before they grow it and they ship it all the way over here. So it would be nice to have somebody watching that food. But from what we're learning today, it sounds like the reverse is going to be true. It sounds like the federal government is going to be watching over the farmers at the farmer's market and allowing those farmers in China pretty much free reign, as long as somebody says they're being nice to us. Am I wrong, Pete?
Yeah, I think here's the key, Michael. There is something that can be done about this. A lot of it just depends on the state. FDA does not have the resources to enforce this act on their own. They're going to rely heavily on the states, and they're likely not going to give them enough money to cover the state's expenses in enforcing the act. The states have the right to refuse to enter into these agreements with FDA. Beyond that, they have the right to, the federal government has taken away much of the state's regulatory powers over the years, and the states can take that back. Probably the most effective thing they can do through legislation in the state houses is to pass laws just taking the regulatory shackles off of the farmers. You know, at the same time, they're refusing this federal money, which likely won't cover their cost to enforce FSMA. And a good example of that would be Wyoming passed the Food Freedom Act earlier this year, where now any direct transaction between farmer or home kitchen producer and consumer, with the exception, I think, of meat products, is legal without any licensing or inspection. And again, you have the just the built-in transparency and traceability factor, where a food system like that can produce safe food, build self-sufficiency for food production in the community, and benefit the local population's health.
Well, then, what about the notion that really frightens me, which is, can the federal food safety police, under the supervision of former Monsanto attorney Michael Taylor, be turned into a political weapon as the Internal Revenue Service was turned into a political weapon to persecute those with whom the powers that be want persecuted?
Well, absolutely. And what this act does, it gives them so much more power. I mean, they're going to be just more opportunity for gray areas, more opportunity for them to abuse their power in carrying out the law. Yeah, and they can use it as a protection act for specific businesses that face competition from the people FDA can regulate into the ground.
Wow. Pete Kennedy, president of Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. How do we tune in with the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund?
Okay, Michael, they can go to our website, farmtoconsumer.org, or they can call our office at 703-208-3276. Like I mentioned earlier, we're strictly grassroots organization. I mean, we need just all the support we can get.
Amen. It sounds like we all need all the support we can get. Thank you very much for joining us today, Pete Kennedy, President, Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Michael Olson, remember Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.